God's love and the evils of jealousy. Jealousy is one of the most destructive evils on the planet Earth. It's one of the most hurtful human emotions. The Pharisees crucified Jesus Christ because of jealousy. People want a monopoly on God's love and God's grace. Paul says, love is not jealous. Now we hear the jealousy of God, but that's a good jealousy. It's a productive jealousy. Human jealousy is a root of great evil. Again, love is not jealous. Jealousy wants to hoard love to itself because it doesn't like to see love or grace spread abroad. It can only feel good about itself if it monopolizes the love and grace of God. As I've often said about Christians, but I haven't said it lately, they want good news. They claim to have the good news. As long as it's not too good. Oh, as long as it's not too good. Because when you tell them that it's God's plan to bless all humanity through the cross of Christ, they're mad. Why? Because they're jealous. They want to monopolize both the love and the grace of God. I was at my sister's house a couple summers ago, and I was sitting on the front porch, and I was watching the sun go down into the west. It was still bright. It was hot. I think it was July. And the leaves on her sycamore tree were taking advantage of the sun. And the sun was dappling them. It was absolutely beautiful. And the breeze came and they shimmied and shimmered in the breeze. And it's like God hung hundreds of leaves on this tree just so they could make a merry noise to him. And not a single leaf refused the privilege of the sun and the wind that came from God, but also not a single leaf resented the fact that the other leaves also received that blessing of the sun. And it's a picture of Jesus Christ. He is the one Son. He's the only Son of God, and he's the source of all of our spiritual life. He shines on every single one of his creatures. Jesus himself says he sends the rain on the just and the unjust alike. It's the same as the sun. And the attention of God on his entire creation never lapses, even when we're least conscious of it or not expecting it. Atheists sure as heck aren't conscious of it or expecting it, and yet the sunshine and the rain blesses them just as well. We live and move and have our being in him even while we're sleeping. And again, not even atheists can escape the attention of God. One day they'll just realize how lavish it all really was. Now they have no idea. And Christians don't either. Christians don't realize how lavish God's love is and will be demonstrably in the future of all creation. God is one, yet we of humanity are many, just like the leaves on the tree, just like the sun and the leaves. I'm comparing that to God and all of humanity. So many leaves, yet not one of them competing with another one. And this, not even 1 billion leaves can exhaust the sun's power any more than 1 million atheists could exhaust God's love. Here's the miracle of the love of God. It's this: pulling love from God only increases his stores of love. The harder the pull, the more overflowing the stores. It's like the grace I was telling you about yesterday. Where sin increases, grace super exceeds. More sin pulls more grace into it, and more grace rushes to it. Consider the loaves and the fishes of the famous Bible miracle, the miracle that Jesus performed, feeding 5,000 people in the wilderness. We see a hint of this. The more food that the disciples yanked from the baskets, the more loaves and fishes came into the baskets. It's like a Kleenex box. You just keep pulling Kleenexes out and they just keep coming. It's like a circus trick, like a magic trick. The faster they yanked, the faster came lunch. That's what I call a drive-through window. That's the divine drive-through. You just keep pulling up and the food just keeps coming. Same thing with grace. The harder that sin draws grace into its wound, the greater quantities of grace run to the rescue. It's as though grace were competing with itself to cover the sin. Me, no, I'll get it, no, I want to get it, no. This is different contingents of grace rushing to the wound of sin. Let me have it, no, let me have it. Word of the need goes forth in the grace community, and thousands of gallons of grace come in to wash in the sin. And that's just to cover a single sin, like an evil thought. Only a teaspoon of grace, let's say, is needed for such a little degree of crime. And it's absurd amounts just to cover that little thing, like an evil thought. Think of it in a serious crime. Well, we saw it when Saul was on his way to Damascus to kill Christians. Saul later became Paul, said, "The grace of God overwhelmed me." Some people try to exhaust grace. I won't mention any names, but you can't exhaust grace. So I was watching those leaves. I thought of all the things besides the leaves and the trees that benefit from the sun. And though the need for the sun might be indirect, there's nothing on this planet, and I'm using the sun as an analogy of the grace and love of God, nothing on this planet lives apart from the sun. The sea life feeds on the plankton that flourishes at the top layers of the oceans. Animal life depends on the herbage of the earth. Even meat can't exist without green. The cows eat the green. They eat the herbage. Meat-eating animals eat herbivores who eat the herbage, which needs the sun. So try to picture every living I want you to do this. So try to picture every living thing on earth. Sea life, animal life, life beneath the microscope, redwoods, leaves of all kinds, sycamore leaves, elm, whatever you like, moths, aphids, antlions, and of course, human beings. Okay, now I want you to marvel at the universal dependence on that one great orb in the sky, the sun. None of these things fight one another. And this is in nature. None of these things, except for the human beings. Well, that's part of nature, but human beings are the ones that get jealous. Hang with me for a second. None of these things fight one another for the sun, because the sun is an equal opportunity shiner, isn't it? Not even human beings have figured out how to wage war over solar favors. They would if they could. If they could get a monopoly on the sun, they would do it. If the government could figure out how to regulate the sun, they would do it. But they can't. As evidence of this, I have seen many unjust people with sunburns, with nice tans, let's say. Very unjust people have nice tans. There's a picture of the grace of God for you. Is God a tightwad? The grasshopper doesn't resent, talking about a grasshopper now, the grasshopper doesn't resent that the leaves of the trees at their altitude get first light. So the grasshopper is what I mean. The grasshopper's on the ground, and the sun comes from above, and the sun hits the leaves first. The grasshopper doesn't say, "Hey, you're getting first dibs on the light here, and that makes me upset." Likewise, the leaves don't say to the grasshopper, "Hey, quit using our leftover solar radiation. That was for us. You're using our leftovers. It's not fair." No. When I was looking at those leaves on my sister's tree, not one leaf even questions solar charity. No. They instinctively realized, I think, that to do so would be cutting off their little green noses despite their little green faces. All right, now let's consider God's love to Israel. God's love falls upon Israel, but this nation wants God all to themselves. That's the sin of Israel, jealousy. They want a monopoly on God's love. They resent that the love of God could and does wash abroad. That's why they hated Paul. The grace of God falls on unworthies of all things, like dogs from among the nations, as though Israel has the market cornered on grace or love, but they think they do. The absolute love of God for everyone comes from God. And so it can only be restricted, if that were possible, at that source. God is the source. Follow me. God's the source of all grace and love. And if you want to restrict it, you have to restrict it at the source. So if Israel wants to restrict it, and they do, they end up punishing themselves. Follow this. It's like trying to foul the city's water supply to keep your enemies from hydrating. I don't want my enemies to have water, so I'm going to foul the city's water supply. Then you go to your own sink. Oops. Maybe it wasn't such a great idea to foul the water supply at its source. Any attempt to harass, regulate, or limit God's love can only hurt those perpetrating such mayhem. Israel is a special people to God, but He tests them to show them the state of their own hearts. On a scale of 1 to 10, they rank about a 0.5. That's not even a 1. And that's just the left ventricle I'm talking about. What if God does love aliens? Oh, well, this outrages the Jews. They hate it. Just witness how the Jews hated Paul for taking their personal deity outside of Palestine. They loathe to extend forgiveness or mercy to anyone. Ah, see how this has boomeranged on them. It has left their own house desolate. You want to burn down the world? Go ahead. Call down a fireball. You might find your own house incinerated instead. And for Israel, that's exactly what happened to Israel. And for them, it's an Aeonian curse. At the end of the curse is a giant mirror where they look at themselves and they say, "Oops!" Imagine us. Let's talk about us. Sorry, I kind of picked on Israel there, but I guess I'm not sorry. Imagine us telling God that we resent, this is what Christians do, we resent His eventual salvation of all humanity. It makes us mad. We say to Him, "We wish You were a little less lavish with this love business." And what if God answered our prayer and said, "You know, I am rather sun-like, shining on everything. I'm going to crank it back about 10 notches. Thanks for the prayer." So God cranks it back. And we wonder, wow, it seems to be a bit cooler here. Like the love of God has cooled on us. What happened to our God-imparted warmth? Well, God cranked back the thermostat. And He cranked it back everywhere. Because it's central heating, baby. God's love is central heating. There's one knob for everything. So if our hearts become constricted by the plaque of hate or bitterness, then God becomes restricted in our own eyes. In our own eyes. See, if we want God to restrict His love, just shine it on us, don't give it to any of these other people that I don't think are worthy of it, then He becomes restricted in our own eyes. Not because He is restricted Himself, but because our tainted lens distorts Him to our perception. We only become as big as our God is. And if we want our God to be little, if you want Him to limit his love to all, then he becomes smaller. And that eventually limits his love to us. So to us, if we think this way, if we pray this way, he will become what we believe him to be, which is a tightwad God. Do you want a tightwad God? A celestial Scrooge. Who wants that? I have discovered through relationships, through worshiping God for years, that all love is connected. To test this principle, I've tried to love, I've tried to love some people less, for the sake of experimentation, mind you, and research. I would sit in a chair and concentrate on depreciating certain individuals who I sort of don't like already, but I happily tolerate them. I think, okay, I'm going to try to think less of them. In order to do this, I usually have to cross my arms and stare at the floor, because I'm a very loving guy, normally. But if I'm going to experiment in lessening my love for somebody, I cross my arms, stare at the floor, try to work it up. I have to have complete quiet in the room, and the room temperature, it's got to be low, like 59 degrees, because that agitates me, because I love warmth, as you know. So, at 59 degrees, it takes a good, I'd say a good 2 minutes to work up a healthy distaste for somebody. It takes longer for out and out enmity. Now, if my heart rate goes to 90 beats per minute, which is fast for me, because I'm in pretty good shape, that tells me that I have worked up a pretty good distaste for somebody. Not bad. If my heart rate goes above that, like around 100, that's the detestation level. If I want to reach the level of detesting someone, it takes generally 3.5 minutes at 59 degrees. Yeah, at that point, my heart rate is hovering around 100 beats per minute. So that ends phase one of the experiment. Okay, I've managed to have some healthy distaste for someone. But here's what I find. The next phase of this is when I consciously break the spell of enmity and I concentrate on people that I really do like a lot. What I find, and this is true, honestly, I've done this. What I find is that I don't like these people, the people that I would naturally love. I don't like these people as much as I did before the experiment. This way, I know that love is connected. If I decrease love in one area, it affects all other areas proportionately. I still love my sister. I still love her a lot, but after I've worked up this enmity for somebody, I notice that my love goes down all around. Don't love her quite as much. But when love naturally gushes abroad from my heart, this is a work of God in me. When love gushes abroad from my heart to love even my enemies, then the light shines that much brighter everywhere. And then my sister can hardly stand me. I'm so lovey-dovey. Try that. When you love your enemies, love goes all around. It's all connected. All right. There's a special love everywhere, but even this love connects to other love. It's like an ecosystem. Jesus is said to have loved the disciple John. Specifically says that. John wrote that, so, you know, might be a little suspect there, but this was a special love even when compared to his love of the other disciples. So there's no doubt John basked in that love. Jesus had a special fondness for John. But what if one day John had said, you know, Jesus, I wish you'd crank it back a little bit for those other guys. This is so good. This love, this specialness of love you have for me is so good. I want more of it. Uh-oh. It would be like the leaves of that tree saying to the sun, we adore our treetop address and everything because we seem to get more of you here than anyone else, but we want more still. So dial it back on the tree. Dial it back a little bit on the tree. Oh, you silly, silly leaves. Biting off your little green nose, despite your little green faces. This is what I would tell John if he ever did anything so stupid. I would say, look, buddy, you're better served celebrating Christ's lavishness than you are plotting how to market or channel it or own it for yourself because of that stupid thing called jealousy. You're going to screw yourself. And people who have exercised jealousy with me, they've ended up screwing themselves, trying to limit love. They're like a black hole of need and attention. Me, me, I want it all. I want it all. And they screw themselves out of a good thing. This is what Christians are doing. They want to limit the love of God. They want it all. They want it all. They screw themselves because they're so limited in their apprehension of love. They don't know what love is. So they don't love their enemies. They barely love their families because their love of God is so constrained. Here's the fear. The fear is probably that love will run out. They see love as a zero-sum game. It's like this isn't anything that grows. It's just, it's going to run out. There's a limited amount of it. What a waste of concern. You may as well suppose that cutting down millions of trees will preserve the sun. That's stupid, isn't it? We need to preserve the sun. So let's cut down all these trees so the sun doesn't have so much to shine on. That's stupid. The sun is not encouraged or discouraged by acreage in a forest. The sun doesn't care if there's a billion acres or 2 acres. The sun shines, it shines, it shines, it does what it does. It does its thing. The volume of benefactors is irrelevant to the sun. Doesn't care. And neither is God, listen to this, neither is God encouraged or discouraged by either throngs or a paucity of people. You could have a billion people or 10 people. God's not encouraged or discouraged. He is what he is. And what he is love. So you don't conserve the love of God by killing people, do you? Do you conserve the love of God? Well, there's only so much of this. So we're going to kill a bunch of people so that God's love doesn't have so much ground to cover. That's ridiculous. We don't conserve it by asking God to dial it back either. You end up screwing yourself. As with grace. Remember yesterday where sin increases, grace super exceeds. As with grace and that little lunch in the wilderness that Jesus provided for the 5,000, more people only produce more love. More people, more love. More trees, more sun. God's love and God's grace rise to the occasion and overwhelms the numbers or even the opposition. That little lunch on the mount, yeah, more people produce more food. More people produce more love from God. The more pull, here's the miracle, the more pull on God's resources, the more resources come to the need. And would we want it any other way? I would sure as hell hope not. I'll end with this verse from 2 Corinthians 5, 14 and 15. For the love of Christ is constraining us, judging this. The love of Christ is forcing us to say this. And today it's forcing me to say this. That if one died for the sake of all, consequently all died, and he died for the sake of all, that those who are living should by no means still be living to themselves. The leaves no longer live to themselves. The grasshoppers no longer live to themselves. The Jews ought to no longer live to themselves. Let the grace of God and love of God do what it will. So that we should, and we of the body of Christ have learned this lesson, and we are happy when the grace of God goes abroad. We are happy to consider the prospect, the truth that others will receive, that everyone eventually will receive it. We're not hoarders. We're not regulators. We're not here to tell God, dial it back for the rest of them because we're going to screw ourselves. He died for the sake of all, that those who are living should by no means still be living to themselves, but to the one dying and being roused for their sakes.